podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
This is Radio Cycling.
Adam Yates, Lotte Kopecky, Mads Pedersen, the big names are already winning the big races. But as we look ahead towards Strada Bianca, Paris-Nice, the Spring Classics, other issues come into play, just as they do every season. Issues like race safety, rider responsibilities, ethics and money. My name's Jeremy Whittle, welcome to Radio Cycling. Here's the news. Team boss Spekenbrink on DSM Firmenich post-NL's philosophy and the need for better doping controls.
How can you protect the people who work hard with their talent and do it in a correct way? Because that's the responsibility of everybody.
Safer, riders set to pay for race safety as debate hots up while organisers go to ground.
Nothing has been proposed, at least not that we know of or have been told, about how to make race organisers more accountable or safer, which is the whole point of safer.
So hello everyone, I'm joined by Peter Cosnes, who's currently combining podcasting with growing broad beans now, is it? I thought it was tomatoes. And sunbathing in the French Pyrenees. So what happened to the tomatoes, Pete?
I think our tomatoes always get, they always get some kind of blight on them here, but the broad beans, they're glorious, Jeremy. I love them.
Is the curse of the tomatoes like the curse of the rainbow jersey then?
I think it might be in this area, yeah.
There you go. Well, I'll remember that. Also with us, taking a break from packing his bag for his winter holiday in Kyrgyzstan, is off-piste maestro of the powder snow, and I don't know who wrote that, Chris Marshall Bell. Hello, Chris.
I didn't even write that, but I am taking a break. In fact, in front of me, I've got my skis out. I've been gluing my skins today.
Pardon?
I don't know what that means.
What's gluing your skins?
So under the back of backcountry skis or Skimo skis, you basically have seal skins, and that's what enables you to go up to kind of walk up the mountain. Look, I can even show you on screen actually. Can you see that?
I think can we fade him out? Okay. Let's get on with the podcast. So, Ioan Spekenbrink may not be one of the most media visible or high profile of team bosses, but he's got a long and illustrious history in professional cycling. The DSM Firmenich post-NL boss is the second of a series of long-format interviews with managers of World Tour teams, following our recent interview with the Visma Lisa Bikes Richard Plugger. A racer as a junior, Spekenbrink managed a marketing and management company that collaborated with the Bank Giro Lotterij team in the early 2000s, and then took over as manager of Skill Shimano in 2008. Over the years, his teams have tasted success in Paris-Roubaix and Milan-San Remo, thanks to John Degenkolb, and also won the Giro d'Italia with Tom Dumoulin in 2017. President of the teams organisation, the AIGCP, for 8 seasons, Spekenbrink has also kept his team within the Movement for Credible Cycling, the MPCC, and is an advocate for increased testing of riders. So Chris and Pete sat down for a chat with him about his team's ethos and ethics, the peloton's pool of talent, and the future pro racing.
So first question then, obviously the season is only a few weeks old, but you've had a very good start to the season. Oscar Onley, who is a favourite of us on this podcast, he won a stage down in the Tour Down Under, and then obviously Casper Van Uden won the first stage in the Lula Tour as well. It's been, yeah, a pretty good start to 2024.
Yeah, definitely. We had a good winter. Not so many sicknesses, and really the team and everybody within the team did a great job. People on the bike, off the bike, we could do some new things, very solid, and we had a good start. And not only Oscar and Casper, of course, the girls also did well with Nienke in Australia, with Rochelle this week already in UAE. So we have a good start, and the beauty of it is these are riders that are already longer with us. They come from our development program, and they're now making steps to become the next generation world stars. So it's nice to be in this flow.
Ewan, I just wanted to pick up on a couple of, I mean, you mentioned Oscar there, and also, I mean, we're kind of a British focused podcast a lot of the time, but I wanted to ask about Max Poole as well, because he's a rider kind of maybe a bit under the radar, really. But I mean, he had some great results last season, and I'm just kind of wondering what your expectations of those two guys are for this year.
They have huge potential. So this year, normally, if all goes well, they will make another step. And if you see at a very young age, also what Oscar did last year, but definitely also Max. I mean, in his first year as pro, finishing almost podium in a tough race like Romandie, for example, and doing so well in Hungary and in Tour de Alps at that young age, it's fantastic. And we actually were only happy that he is still under the radar a little bit, because nowadays, with young riders, when they're 2021, they already they hype them already, and already make almost stars of them. But they still have to make steps, and then the pressure can be too high, and you're always afraid. Well, maybe they won't last until they're 33, 34, 35 years old. So they will soon enough come in the spotlight, and we're happy we could now focus on the work with them. But they will make steps. We will see some good results from those two. And Oscar already showed it in his first race.
Do you know where Max will be? I mean, I know he rode the Vuelta at the end of last year. I'm guessing he's going to do another Grand Tour. Can you say which one it will be?
Yeah. Normally he will do the Giro.
Okay.
One rider who is in the spotlight and who has been in the spotlight for the last 4 or 5 years is Fabio Jakobsen. Now, you've signed him on a three-year deal. What do you expect from Fabio? Because I think most cycling fans would probably say that on his day, he can be the best sprinter in the world.
Yeah, he has a lot of potential purely as a sprinter. And we always look to sportsmen. Sportsmen are an athlete, so they can sprint, but there's also they're also a personality. And those together, they form the sportsman. And he also brings a personality that can make a team better, that can help drive a team, bring positivity, but also encouragement and also positive criticism. He is raising the bar. We have already a good sprint train in place. And with him, I think we can elevate to a next level. And vice versa, we also have the confidence that we can make another step with Fabio himself.
I mean, one of the things that I guess has become discussed a lot about your team is that it frequently loses its leading riders, and there's questions about strictness. Just wonder what your take is on that, Iwan.
It's a good question. So there's all kinds of reasons why athletes come and go. I mean, that's in every sport and definitely also in cycling. So there is always, let's say, the normal things like, you have more riders who grow to a top level and you have to make choices. We have to make a choice which rider we want to keep when there's more, let's say, equal riders within our possibility, within our budget, etc., etc. And also, obviously, riders have to make a choice where they believe they can pursue their sporting dreams. I think that's more the normal things. If you speak about the strictness, we are changing a little bit the way the way we perform high performance in cycling. And if you change things, human nature is not always a change there. Oh, that's nice. We're going to change something. So, you always will encounter a little bit of challenges with that. And we know that. If people will not easily say, I couldn't deal with the change or whatsoever. So it's always logic then to point at something else. And we know that. But I can assure you that how we operate you can ask it in our team, you can ask it to our staff. We put, let's say, the sportsman central. And like I said, the sportsman is an athlete and it's a personality. And we have a lot of people in the team, very gifted, very dedicated, but also very driven people on the bike. And also very gifted and determined and passionate people off the bike. And our job is not, once we have the collection of that nice group of people, that's not that we're ready. That's only it's a very important start, but it's only the start. And our job then is, how do we get more out of our potential than other teams do? I mean, we are in a competitive environment. So we could get more out of our potential. And yeah, then you have to find a way how to do it together. How can everybody contribute to the goals that we all have? And then somehow you have to put some human value central. And that's the only thing we are strict, that we ask from people, you're part of a team, let's commit to each other. Everybody with its very own personality, with its very own very own qualities, very own strengths, very own weaknesses. Just be 100% yourself. Everybody should be exactly who he is, him or herself, but also allow the other. That's an equality. Also allow the other to be yourself and then commit to each other. So engage with each other, challenge each other on how can we do better, explain things to each other. But the one line is don't sideline a colleague, that you take away the responsibility of that person so that that person cannot contribute his or her part to make the difference. And that's the only, line we have, because if we go there and that you see that in so many teams, then you get also not only a race against the other teams, but you get a race inside your team. You have to fight over decisions to be taken, and that's slowing us down. And we don't want to be slowed down. We want to progress.
I just wondered, just following up on that, I mean, do you think that criticism's unfair sometimes? I mean, I know that, for example, I follow football pretty closely, and you see people piling in on social media and whatever and saying the manager should have picked this player, and why has he dropped that player, and why have they sold this guy? And people don't really know what's going on, essentially. I mean, you guys are on the inside and you do know what's going on, and you kind of, I guess you're kind of, there are certain situations where you can't say what's going on because it's just not wise, basically.
Yes, I think this is a good question. And so we very much believe in what we do. We know if we can work better so that we don't lose time in, let's say, our internal race, who gets what he wants or who can make the decisions. But if we are committed to each other, we can much better and much nicer and much faster implement all the knowledge we have. We have really invested in a lot of knowledge. And then we can sometimes innovate and we get more out of our potential. And then it's much nicer. If everybody is part of success, that gives an enormous positive vibe, as you see it also in this period. You see so many smiling faces. And then success is repeating and you're growing your team. Of course, sometimes in execution, something should have been better. I mean, we also have to look in a mirror. It's not that once you have a good vision, that all is perfect and the execution should also be right. But to your point, also, for example, football clubs, teamwork is not, hey, we have a great team as long as I get what I want. And if somebody else does his or her job and I don't like it, then we're all of a sudden not a team anymore. That's not teamwork. So, yeah, you need coaches who in the end in a race have to make tactical decisions. They are not making a decision in favor of one or against another. They make a decision for how can we have the best possible results. And if you are a good team, then you also empower your coach to make the decision. And you don't look at it, hey, it's in favor of me or against somebody else. So that's, you always have to work on teamwork. And in soccer, you also see if that goes well, that everybody is respecting each other's role and empowering each other in their role, then they go then they become better. But as soon as you have individuals who like the team process up until a certain extent, that if something has happened they don't like, and then they go against it, their own team, then the team gets in a weaker spot. You see it in so many. It's a quality to have good teamwork with so many people.
Ewan, one of the main things that your team has been known for in the last 6-7 years, well, throughout your whole existence, has been your anti-doping stance. You are proud members of the MPCC, which is the Movement for Credible Cycling. None of the top 10 male-ranked riders in the world are part of the MPCC right now. I believe that none of the top 5 teams are also part of the MPCC right now. You know, I appreciate you're not a spokesperson for that movement, but I mean, in today's age now, in 2024, we've started February with free doping positives as well, which is never a good look. what is the role of the MPCC? Is it still relevant today? And how can we get these bigger riders, these bigger teams back on board? And is it a risk to the credibility of the sport that we have this movement? And unfortunately, the best ranked riders are not part of it.
Yeah, that's quite some questions.
there was, I apologize.
No, but I think it starts with, in anything you want to manage or you want to solve, you have to take into account human nature. And human nature, humans are fantastic. They do great things. They can surprise you. But sometimes, and especially when you put them under pressure, when there's a lot of them depends on things. In for example, in a competitive sport like ours, yeah, there is also humans who cheat. And by the way, that's not only in cycling. I mean, there is reasons why we have cops on the street, because apparently people sometimes do things we don't want, or while we have prisons. So it starts with the fact that, yes, in high-performance sports, doping is a factor. And then it's a matter of setting up a system. How can you protect the people who work hard with their talent and do it in a correct way? Because that's the responsibility of everybody, that we can protect the people who can win based on their talent and hard work and intelligence, and not with performance-enhancing products or methods. And as long as you then have doping cases, but at the same time, even when there is less doping cases, there will be no one who says, yeah, but now the rest is all clean. That would be too naive. I think we can all agree the fact that if you have negative tests, it is not a guarantee that everything is clean. Yeah, so everything that you can do extra is a plus. And in a way, I think we should be careful to not saying who is part of it and who is not part of it, and make that a competition amongst the teams. They are the good teams, they are the bad teams. Let's stay away from that. But let's applaud for people who are willing to, beyond what we have now in place, beyond the let's say the controls we have now in place, etc., that there are people willing to take the extra step to be more to make cycling more credible. And not only that, what MPCC is also doing is flagging issues. What they did in the past with cortisones. Yeah, if you had a young sportsman or young sportswomen going to a big race, but they all had a doctor attest and they had cortisones, that people don't understand it. Hey, you have to send young and healthy people to a race, and why do they all need cortisones then? For example, it was allowed, but people don't really understand why do they take that medicine if they're not. And if they are sick and they have to take it, well, then you should stay at home. So there was also, let's call it, let's say, a legal use of medicine, which could be performance enhancing. The example of corticosteroids, and that's what flagged by MPCC. And later on, it got on the WADA list, and now it's prohibited, fortunately. The same with tramadol, the painkiller. All of a sudden, people, it's hard to explain to people. Yeah, you have to take tramadol, but we are perfectly healthy and we try to win bike races. That's a contradiction. And in the end, it turns out also to be performance enhancing, or at least dangerous. Yeah, and that's flagged by the MPCC, and now it is prohibited. So it's not only to try and do an extra step, but to also not be naive and raise alarm bells when needed. Yeah, and of course you hope that as much as possible people have the moral in the right place and want to make in either through MPCC or in their own way the extra mile to make sure that we do cycling in a clean way. And beside that, I also believe it's very important that we should step up with our anti-doping system. What is a little bit of pity, and sometimes people criticize me for that when I say let's have even a more robust anti-doping system. Let's test even much more. And people then say, yeah, but it's negative. But it's not negative. I mean, after every Giro d'Italia, and especially after every Tour de France, they're asking the winner, can we trust you? So apparently people don't trust the winners of the biggest bike races. Well, if you're tested so much and if you set up an anti-doping system where people can't go, where there's not loopholes for people when they can, let's say, cheat the system, then the winner is already credible if he wins. And he doesn't have to defend because he won a bike race, because he was successful. So to make a bigger and more robust anti-doping system is not only to, it's not at all something negative, it's also to give more credibility to the winner. And yes, if we then take out the people who don't do it in the correct way, it's also a plus.
Ewan, I mean, obviously one of the big talking points over the last few months has been the One Cycling project. And without going too far into that, I just wondered, I saw this week that I think it was GCN that did it, actually. They had a story that kind of, they produced some stats that said, well, effectively, why do we need One Cycling? Like the teams are pretty stable and the races are all running and everything's okay. I just wonder, and I've seen the same arguments from fans as well, saying, why do we need to change races? Why do we need to do this? Why do we need to do that? I just wonder, just from your point of view, why do you think this proposal or a proposal like this is important?
Now, I think that it's not true that teams are stable. I mean, if you look since the start of the World Tour in 2004, how many great teams have just disappeared? One thing. And then there is smaller organizers who just can keep their race alive, but they also struggle. So then we had two of the biggest teams last year, which almost had to merge in order to be able to continue. I mean, it's economically, cycling is not in a good place. If it's okay for you to give a little bit more background here, which many people who really follow cycling more closely, they know. If you look to the whole World Tour, so all the races and all the teams, more or less 2/3 of that is financed by the teams. But for bringing all that money in the sport, there is no incentive at all for them, because if they lose a sponsor, yeah, the team goes bankrupt. So they can invest all the money in the sport, but things like making profit is not possible. And at the same time, creating value, not at all. Because if you don't, what is the value of a team? The moment your sponsor contract ends, there is no value of it. So it's obviously, if you finance 2/3 of the sport, in any other sport, it would be good that there is an incentive for people who do it and make it all possible. And to do it, you want to have a more stable system. That the one revenue stream that teams now depend on is sponsorship, and we know from sponsorship, it's always short term and it can even be opportunistic. So every team employs 160 people. And your window is 2 years, maybe 3 years. That is not successful, not for teams, not for riders. So you want to create a more stable situation where you can not only keep bringing the money into the sport, which we do now, let's say 2/3 of the World Tour we bring in, but where you can also create value, where you can, where things are more stable, more calm. And the way how pro cycling is today, and as many people know, that is impossible. We have this big giant ASO. they are a monopolist in our sport. They've been very, very successful. Basically all the profit in the sport goes to one family, to one entity. They are very, very, very profitable, and they create a lot of value. Because of they are so big, our federation is relatively weaker, as we all know. So yeah, they have to make rules which are more or less also acceptable for ASO. And that's why, the rules for organizers are completely different than rules for teams. So there is an unstable situation. The way the rules are drawn up, do not make teams stronger. And that's the whole playing field we are in. And we don't have to be, let's be clear, we are in this sport of cycling, so let's not be bitter. It is already for decades like this, so it is what it is. And let's have fun in our sport. But if you want to change and if you want to shift that situation, teams by itself can't do it. Because you always have the people who say, but go to the tour and then strike and it's negative. What does it mean for the fans if you go to the tour and you strike? that makes no sense. But once the teams can partner up with an investor and create something that could shift the balance, that you could, yeah, besides what is now successful in cycling, the teams are successful. You have two Grand Tours, which are very successful, the Giro and the Tour. You have four monuments, spring monuments, which are successful. And all the other races over which we are all divided, riders are and teams are split over, divided over so many teams. All these events are basically light versions of a Grand Tour, meaning a shorter stage race, or a light version of a monument, a shorter one-day race. But they are not so successful. They don't bring all that that success. And if you can create something which is beside the four spring monuments and the two Grand Tours, yeah, which is also a third successful formula, yeah, then you can create value. You can create, you can make fans be more attractive for fans. You can create younger fans, more appealing fans. So we probably will need ultimately an investor to. Yeah, to make a change in our sport, because ourselves we couldn't do it over the last decades.
Just to finish up then, because I know you've spent plenty of time with us, from both your men's and women's team and obviously your development team as well, is there one rider or maybe two or three riders who you think that us journalists and us fans should be keeping an eye on for this season? Is, I don't know, maybe a surprise package or a result that no one's expecting?
No, yeah, I think you are insiders, so you know already who to follow. You mentioned already Max Poel, Oscar Onley, and Casper van Uden. They are still young. Let's not give them the pressure, but you will already see that they will step up this year. They will already do, and they have already done nice things, but they will do more nice things. And then, of course, we have the more senior riders in our men's program, Warren Barguil, Romain Bardet, Fabio Jacobs, and for sure you will see them. And what we like a lot, and what you've seen in the last weeks, when it's about sprint trains, it's not only the sprinter. It's the sprint train which increases the chance of our sprinter to be successful. And that's what we like, to have a really solid, really a unit, that sprint train, which, because of how they perform, that our sprinter has a bigger chance to be successful. You saw that very nice with the win of Casper, for example. So with the sprinters being successful, we hope you see and enjoy from our sprint trains. And basically for our women program, the same. Of course, we have for the GC Juliette Labou, who we hope will be successful again. But there is some really young upcoming riders there. One we already saw in Australia, Nienke Finke. But there's other young riders coming up, Eglantine, Rayer, and more. And there we also have a very solid, very strong sprint train with Charlotte de Gaulle, and also the riders who help her to bring her the best possible position to sprint. And for you British, as you know, we also have some good British riders in our team who we really hope. Fiver Jorsey, obviously, who will make another step. She is very important for our sprint train. She's very important to support our GC chances, but she's also very, very successful in the classics and a lot of potential. So she will also make another step.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for joining us on Radio Cycling.
That's Ewan Speckenbrink. Now, for me, one of the key takeaways from that really engrossing conversation is his desire for the need for more testing within the sport.
I think, as you mentioned out at the start of that interview, Jez, Speckenbrink was the leader of the AIGCP for 8 years, and it's quite telling the difference between him and Richard Plugger, who is now the current leader of the AIGCP, because you can't really help but like Speckenbrink. He's such a good voice for the sport, and he wants the sport to be run in an ethical way. I'm not saying that Richard Plugger doesn't, but Richard Plugger is very divisive, and it's just curious how one president who succeeded the previous one is very, very different, even though they're from the same country. Is one better? Well, that depends on who you're going to ask.
Now, those who caught our last pod will remember that we spoke about SAFER, the organisation that is being set up to improve the safety of professional bike races. Think of it as VAR for road racing. We particularly homed in on the appointment of Jaap van Hulten as the body's CEO. That's because van Hulten has only just tendered his resignation as the COO of Visma Lisabike, which led to accusations of a conflict of interest surrounding his appointment. Now, Chris, we know that Safe R will have a refereeing role in some scenarios, but before we go into the main discussion about this, quickly update us on the latest with van Hulten.
Absolutely. So Mr. van Hulten announced in early February that he is leaving his role at Visma Lisabike, but he will combine his role at Visma and Safer until the end of April. I recently spoke with Javier Barrio, not Javier Guillen. I apologise for getting them confused last week. Javier Guillen is the race director of the Vuelta España. Apologies. Barrio is the AIGCP's managing director. He said to me that there was a majority support for Mr. van Hulten's appointment and that the accusations of any conflict of interest were both puzzling and completely unfounded. He pointed out to me that Mr. van Hulten will be accountable to the supervisory board of Safer. And Barrio also told me it was completely ludicrous, that was a quote, to say van Hulten would favour someone such as Jumbo. Barrio also added that Safer is only really an advisory body and that the UCI is still in charge of rule changes and disciplinary actions. This despite Safer having a budget of around €700,000.
Right, are we calling it Safer or Safe R? Because it's written as S-A-F-E-R, isn't it? So, I mean, is this a brand name or is this a kind of organisation? Or just so people listening as well know whether it sounds stupid by saying Safer or smart by saying Safer, which is it? Do we know?
So the R stands for road cycling. So it's Safe and then R, which is...
Well, this is one of those...
It's a stupid acronym. I hate it.
Yeah, it's one of those things that somebody thought of in a marketing meeting. I thought, oh, that's really cool. That's really cool. And then everyone sits around going, what is it, Safe R or Safer? Okay, so that's solved, sort of. Work out how the best way to say Safer or Safer is. What about the next bone of contention then?
So the big headline news of Safer is the introduction of yellow and red cards. This was a Safer idea. This is what they've been talking about for the last 2 years or so. But it will be the sole remit of the UCI's commissaires and a disciplinary panel. Safer can only make recommendations. You could argue, to be honest, that Safer has next to no power at all. We've been sent an email with a list of 20 yellow card infractions. There's the usual stuff on there. There's drafting, the use of pavements that aren't allowed in races, non-compliant position on the bike, such as the puppy paws, assault and abuse, and littering outside of designated zones. It's been proposed, but not ratified yet, that 3 yellow cards over a 30-day period will result in an immediate 14-day suspension. 6 yellow cards over a 52-week period will result in a 30-day suspension. Despite the name, there's not really going to be a red card because automatic disqualification already exists. But these yellow cards will come into effect on August the 1st in World Tour and Second Tier races. And to get us all really, really excited, they will even try to introduce physical yellow cards in 2025. How exciting is that? It's proper VAR now.
Okay, so that's a bit of clarity on the yellow and red cards, I think. I'd like to see a commissaire using a card mid-race in the mountains, though. I mean, how is this going to be like a motorbike commissaire just comes alongside a rider and brandishes a card? Is that how it's going to work?
I hope so.
Do we know?
It'd be great, wouldn't it? It'd be so funny to see. Like, I just want to see a rider just literally get yellow carded in a race.
Red carded would be even better. Well, I hope Chris Kamara isn't training to be a UCI commissaire.
And we're off to Fratton Park where there's been a red card. But for who, Chris Kamara?
I don't know, Jeff, has there? I must have missed that. Red card.
Chris.
Anyway, back to Safer. What are the issues with the proposed yellow cards then, Chris?
Safer's budget will be funded 30% by teams and 30% by organisers and 20% each by the UCI and World Tour riders. Now, the 3 things that Safer is responsible for is analysing risks relating to routes, providing safety advice to stakeholders, carrying out audits, basically disciplinary measures, on organisers, teams and riders. Problem is, the measures addressed so far only relate to rider punishments. Last week, so the first week of February, Riders in the World Tour were asked to pay 200 euros to invest into Safer. They were given 24 hours notice by the CPA, which is the riders' union, and most accepted. Nothing has been proposed, at least not that we know of or have been told, about how to make race organisers more accountable or safer, which is the whole point of Safer. So far, it all relates to punishing riders. As one person said to me, riders are paying to be fined. Some teams we know are pretty furious, and we know of some riders who are livid when they've been told what they've actually paid for. As one person said to me, and this was a great analogy, and I even requested permission to steal, they said, it's like working as a builder for a construction company and having to pay the company to look after your safety.
Well, obviously, given the state of some races in 2023 with policing, motorbike issues and traffic control, I mean, I was thinking before we recorded, you could cite several incidents last year. This seems to be a huge miss. But anyway, let's hear now from Adam Hansen, the president of the Riders Union, the CPA.
Well, it has to be funded. And the reason why the riders are paying so they can have one person on the two people on the board. So the teams pay 30%, the organisers pay 30%, the riders pay 20%, the UCI pay 20%. So that means the riders can have two people on the board. So I'm on the board and Alessandra's on the board. Now, there is questions, should the riders pay for their own safety? They're not really paying for their own safety. They're paying for to have people on the board to control this commission so we can make sure that it goes in direction for the riders. Just a little bit of background. So in the past, there was a lot of, let's say, doping and cycling, and they wanted to clear the sport. So with the ITA testing, cyclists are getting more tested than any other athletes. And to fund this, the riders are paying for it, but also the teams and organizers are paying for it. So when we're discussing this project, or when they were discussing with us, it was sort of like, well, if the organizers and the teams are paying for the extra doping for the riders, when it's really the riders' fault, then in this sense, okay, the riders can contribute also to the Safer project. So it's a bit fair across the board in that sense, because, you know, if the teams and organizers wanted to pull out, they could have pulled out the funding in that. So that explains that part. Now, in terms of finding the riders, if you go into there was a list that was presented where it had all the different fines and did look like it was just targeting the riders, but that's not really true. If you look at the I think it's the UCI regulation code of those fines, it goes in far more detail of who exactly it is. And they just presented that, just the top line, and it's about a paragraph of all different text and different, I don't know the proper terminology, but it's like different levels of that fine. And it does include photographer motorbikes, DSs, and organisers in that. So it's not just the riders. And we have to remember, the yellow and red card and Safer is two different systems. So while it looks like it's the same, it's not. It's not. The UCI have just allowed the Safer, commission board, to also talk about the yellow and red card system, only because this group of, individuals that we have, we all represent each stakeholder. So it's really good because we actually get a lot done. That's probably the most important thing to say. We're all at the table, we're all discussing, and I think this is the important thing. And the UCI is taking advantage of this system, of all of us together, to define the yellow and red cards.
So, Pete, what do you make of this?
I think the thing I find most bizarre about it, Jeremy, and Chris, I mean, he mentioned it there, is the fact that this initiative's all about making racing safer. The finding of riders is incidental. I mean, the UCI commissaires have got the ability to do that already. I mean, waving a yellow or a red card doesn't really add anything at all. We want riders to be safe in races. They want to be safe in races. And I don't know, it just seems to be a lot of dallying at the moment. We're not seeing that.
Well, maybe we will eventually be able to make some sense of it all. Anyway, that's about it for this show. Thanks to producers, The Wills, and of course to our guests. Thanks for listening and see you next time.
Sports Social Podcast Network.